This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast. I'm Pete, and of course I'm with the actor, Johnny Sorrow. Johnny, how's the singing and dancing coming along, buddy?
It's going, I can only speak for myself, but I've been practicing more than for someone who's not known for showing a lot of discipline, especially those of you who have listened to us podcast for the last maybe 5 years or whatever,
And the guy who's going to do a bi-monthly Brainbuster. Four shows.
Well, that was even harder because that required like tons of writing and research and work. And so, but this is just practice, practice, practice. I've learned all my lines and I'm mastering the singing right now down here in my man cave. So, and the dance moves at the bottom of my list, but I can fake my way through that.
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, the real reason part of quit Titans is because he was waiting for your playlist for the Jimmy Valiant experience. And he's just diva'd out because you never delivered and stuff. Couldn't work with a slacker like you. And
Is that what sent him spiraling down the right wing path?
Exactly.
It's all my fault.
No, you didn't give him the Jimmy Valiant. I mean, that could have changed his life.
I could have changed Brexit. But, you know, what can I tell you?
But hey, enough of Parv.
I've heard a lot of people say that.
I know. That's the greatest segue ever. let's get right into the footage, man. And we're opening up December 1st, 1978. Gino Hernandez, fresh off his face, off his hair match with Jose Lothario versus Nick Kozak. And Gino's in the full, like, Buddy Rose mask with the hair attached to the mask. It's absolutely glorious. Nick Kozak, he's not the ref here. He's the wrestler who – have you read the Pat Patterson book?
No, I haven't.
You know, in the Patterson book, he put Kozak over as, like, one of the best babyfaces he's ever wrestled. I'm really impressed with him. Me and Matt D have been trying to scour find some like early footage of the guy. Because you see, when you watch the footage so far from the guy, you do see, you know, glimpses of it. Mm-hmm. Even how late he is in his career at this point, you really do see a lot of the traits that would make a great babyface, like showing great fire. He would sell and sell and sell. Like, do you remember that match he had with, I think it was one of the Japanese guys, and the place was going nuts and stuff.
And you look at him, he's older here, but he's still in amazing shape.
Yeah.
And he does a lot of like high flying stuff, but old fashioned high flying stuff with like kip ups and stuff. So I kind of picture him as one of those guys you'd see from the early 60s or mid 60s when there weren't a lot of body guys, but occasionally there was those body guys who did a lot of high spots and they were always baby faces. I'm figuring Nick Kozak was one of those guys. Kind of like a
Red Bastinish.
Antonina Rocca, sort of thing.
That's cool. But hey, man, I'm loving this. First off, you see the fan who has the identical gimmick as Gino on. It was this fat Hispanic guy.
Did you tell he was Hispanic? He had a mask on.
Well, they do a close-up of him. You just could tell. You can see his dark skin, and then like you can just see some of the traits. Whatever.
Was the mask stained with nacho cheese?
Now you're being ridiculous. Now you're being racist.
Dare you.
No, it wasn't nacho cheese. It was the salsa that gave it away. It was fantastic. I mean, it was so great. Bosch is going nuts over the guy in the mask. And even Gino doesn't even know what to make of it because it's so nutty, you know? But it really is. I thought it was like one of the most incredible things ever because it was like at times he was pantomiming with the guy. It was great. great. I love Bosch putting over Kozak's record service. You know, you gotta support your boy. I appreciate that. And it, I mean, it's a basic story, you know. Kozak's after the mask. Gino escaping to the outside. I love Kozak with this really neat looking ankle pick, and he starts to work the leg. And I really liked how Kozak is a really interesting thing, as he's like Charlie Horse in the leg. So it's kind of a different working the leg aspect, but he's working it over, and I really enjoyed it. Gino would cut him off, but Kozak's great at showing fire, and Kozak's after the mask again. Gino with an eye rake, and it stops him cold. I love Gino throwing these wild throwing punches and missing. Kozak was great because he'd like use these deliberate measuring the punches. They're brawling on the floor. Gino with the elbows from the mount. Big Russian leg swing followed by a few elbow drops. Gino with the win. I mean, I just love the match because of its simplicity. The basic story, you see Kozak trying to rip off the mask of Gino and embarrass him. He's constantly going for it. He really, he was, his selling was great, but what his calling card was his fire and getting the crowd behind him. Plus, both guys are really good at playing to the cheap seats here. Like, everything, all their movements were big and just elaborate. And I really want to see the next week. It's supposed to be Gino and Jose in a revenge match, return match, which I hope we get. Again, just great storytelling and making the most of the gimmick. Plus, with the fan out there with the gimmick, also just added, it really added another layer to the match. I give it 3.25 stars. I mean, it was just basic storytelling, and it's, I mean, it was easy to follow along. You damn well knew what the story was. You know, Gino was this bastard heel, and he knew Kozak. What his goal was to pull the mask off and embarrass Gino. That was his ultimate thing, and it ended up costing him the match. And so that's another part of the storytelling here. And Gino's able to sneak the win out, squeak out the win, because Kozak constantly going for the mask. Good stuff, man. Well, what'd you make of it, brother?
Well, it's a good thing Gino was wearing the mask when he finally was at ringside and saw the guy in the mask. Because it seemed to me like Gino was laughing.
Yeah.
Like he saw him and was laughing. It was a good thing he had that mask on. Because
he, like, popped him.
Yeah, well, that's the thing also. That's the sort of thing you see more nowadays, you know, fans being silly.
Yeah, not back everything. Then. Like,
not back then, and I love it because I'm like, that's the kind of shit me and Joey would do, you know? You know, never quite to that extent, but we loved goofy shit.
Yeah.
And the guy was just having the best time. He was, like, right there, third row.
Laughing.
And he's going nuts, and everyone's laughing their ass off at him. And, again, Paul loved him. At the end, he's like, don't get confused. That's not Gino. And speaking of Paul, at one point, he sneezes or something, and he goes, excuse me. I'm recuperating from a bloody nose. And I was like, bloody nose? And then later on, he mentions that apparently before this happened, there was some sort of altercation between Dusty Rhodes and somebody, and Paul must have been in the middle of it and accidentally got a bloody nose. You know, and he mentions Dusty getting a bull rope. So, you know, I don't know who he was feuding with. Yeah, probably Ladd.
Could be Ladd, could be a Lewin, you never know.
Yeah. But, as far as the gimmick, not the mask, but the angle, it's something I love. It's old school in wrestling. I mean, actually, it's been done in recent years, and I'll mention when. Is when a guy gets his head shaved, and he immediately starts wearing a mask. So what you're doing is the fans think finally, they're like, aha, he got his head shaved. Now we're going to see him bald. But no, now he's wearing a mask. So it's delaying everything. It's delaying the satisfaction of the fans to give them what they want. Now they want to see the mask pulled off. And sometimes the heel would get away with it. And by the time the mask got pulled off, he had already grown his hair back. And I always felt that was one of those times where the fans didn't get what they want. They kind of fucked them.
Yeah.
You know, kind of fucked them. And I love that. You know, I think it's great. Because nowadays people be getting online and on Twitter and bitching about, you know, oh, they're not honoring the stipulations. Back then it just meant heat.
Yeah.
I mean, they just hated you more. It's, people weren't hating the booking. They were hating the character
yeah.
doing the activities, you know. And And if you did get pulled off, hooray. And I was thinking about it when I was writing. I was like, yeah, that hasn't happened in years. And then I remember the last time it did. And granted, it's been a few years, but it was in the 2000s, was when Punk got his head shaved against Ray. And he started wearing the Straight Edge Society mask so no one could see his bald head. And I think that's the only recent example I can remember seeing that. Well, Angle, that was in the 90s.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
you know?
It was late 90s. Yeah, that was the last time I remembered it.
Or even, not just the wig. I'm talking about like the full head mask.
Well, he had the headgear. Yeah, I know, but it wasn't. Yeah, you're right. The mask. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I can't.
And then he just couldn't shave it off. You know, they just. Yeah. And it's funny is with Angle, when they had him take off the wig, they immediately switched his character from being goofy into being more serious.
Yeah.
But I always love it. Kozak's a great fired up baby face. He's still got a lot of moves. I mean, he's got a better build than most other guys half his age at this time. And yes, because Paul puts him over because he's his boy, but you know, Paul Bosch says, he's like, I've known this man a long time, and he's an honest man. He's like, sounds, making him sound like a used car salesman at his wrecker shop. But then again, that just tells you that Kozak's also bright. We mentioned this before. He's in wrestling. He does relatively okay, and he invests his money in a fucking business.
Yeah, exactly. Then we got this really fun promo with Ernie Ladd and Tiger Conway. And I guess Ladd's kid, maybe?
Yeah, it's supposed to be Ladd's kid.
What did you make of all this, man?
Well, first of all, the kid is from the 70s, and he looked like in every sitcom where they had to have the token black kid. Oh, that's that actor. Maybe it was an actor. Watts, not Watts. Ladd was just like, I need a good actor to play my son. But anyway, his son's there. Tiger's fro is exploding like Nagasaki.
Yep.
It's a mushroom cloud of fro. And and Paul's loving the kid. He gives the kid a kiss. He shows, I love black people. Tiger's giving us this babyface promo. And then it goes over to Ernie Ladd, and he's giving a pretty babyface type of promo. He's there with the babyface. He's there with his kid. And they're talking about this and that, and it's all babyface shit. And then he goes, but I just want to mention that Dusty Rhodes is a low down, no good, you know, egg sucking dog. And it's just like, it's hilarious. Like it makes you feel, even if he's a good guy, he still hates Dusty Rhodes. You know? And Tiger's kind of looking at, Tiger's giving him the same look that Mike Myers gave Kanye West when Kanye West said George Bush doesn't care about black people. That uncomfortable, like, huh? I thought we were doing a baby face promo. He's like, but just goes to show. And it's so neat because it reminds me of with him and Dusty and Terry Funk and Dusty, is that no matter what, they always put over that they hated each other or they hated him, you know? It was always a thing. They were never friends.
Yeah, I want to see more of this transpire because I'm curious if Ladd ends up going full-blown heel out of this because it was definitely being teased because of his hatred for Dusty. Mm-hmm. And the way Tiger was like looking at him like, what the fuck?
He's telling his son, too. He's like, boy, I'm going to tell you something. Never trust the son of a no-good plumber.
Yep.
He's like, he's stealing our, you know, he's telling him, he's like, that's the perfect example of the white man stealing our style.
I thought it was brilliant. I mean, because it felt like there's a lot of stuff they can do off this promo. You could go with obviously the clear thing is a Dusty Ladd match. Tiger can be conflicted on who he's supposed to support, you know, they can be in a tag match against Dusty and somebody, and Ladd does something illegal, and Tiger doesn't, he disagrees with his partner's tactics. I mean, there's a lot of room to do here. So
it would probably be something like that. They did that a lot, and then he'd have a little angle with Ladd, you know, and of course it's great because Ernie Ladd's just such a great promo.
Oh, he's incredible, isn't he?
He's amazing.
So
I love him.
Silky smooth. Uh-huh. He's kind of like Don Cornelius in a way. You know what I'm saying? where you just think he's like the coolest guy. Him, he's there's Ernie Ladd, Don Cornelius, and Lando, and Billy Dee Williams, Lando Carlisle himself.
Uh-huh. I'm just picturing fucking Ernie Ladd host the. This is the big cat Ernie Ladd hosting Soul Train.
Oh yes. Oh man, can you think of any other wrestler?
For those of you who don't remember, Soul Train was a show in '70s and early '80s. That was on Saturday afternoons. So it was in that wrestling bubble of things you saw on local TV and syndicated. And it was just it was like American Bandstand, which was also like the tradition of like, we're gonna show you a bunch of teenagers dancing and play the hits of the day, and a band will come on and lip sync. You know, and it was a thing. And Soul Train was it for African Americans. And Soul Train was by far the cooler show.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It was the best show.
It was. Can you think of any other wrestler who could have been Don Cornelius in Soul Train besides Ernie wrestler? Ladd?
Any besides Ernie Ladd? Well,
I mean, I think Ladd is by far the best choice.
I think it's Ladd, man, because he's got to be an African American guy because it's Don Cornelius in Soul Train.
I mean, it'd be blasphemy if you had Dick Clark or
Dusty. Are you Dusty on that?
Can you imagine? Oh, Jesus.
It's Soul Train. Thunderbolt Patterson, maybe.
Okay, I could buy Patterson. He's a little too
Southern. Don Cornelius had that booming voice. He has he's got the same kind of voice as Ernie Ladd. That's what.
Yeah.
I picture, and Ernie Ladd could wear the same outfit that he wears on those ghetto street fights.
Yep.
Which is the best thing ever, was that the ghetto street fight, he dresses like $1 million because, no, this is how I dress in the quote-unquote ghetto. It was that was like a blow for African-American rights and against stereotypes. If it's a ghetto street fight, he's dressed like
to the nines.
To the nines. It's great. He's awesome.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to go to Ladd. I'm trying to think of another guy who I could possibly buy into the Don Cornelius role. I know we're going deep here.
Junkyard Dog.
Yeah, I was thinking Dog, maybe. Butch Reed. I mean, we'll talk about his promo later. I just don't know.
But I don't think Butch Reed can handle that cool, slow thing. He's going to tear someone's fucking head off.
You dance too slow. Let me dance with that woman.
Let me dance with your woman. Butch Reed can do the line from Animal House. You mind if we dance with your date?
Oh, man, that's awesome. Hey, on that note, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Man, and we're back. And we are back, and we are looking at February 20th, 1987. And we have Sam Houston versus the Super Ninja. Wow, what a man. Here, take it away, brother.
Okay, first of all, for the longest time, I'd forgotten Sam Houston was in the UWF. And then I remember this was right around the time. I think he was the advanced scout, I think, for Crockett buying the territory. Because now, in fact, the first time I even remembered it was when I read it in Foley's book. And he mentions it.
Yep, exactly.
Working with him. I was like, Sam Houston was a... And then, oh, I kind of remember now, because this is when I was starting to peter off. Guys were leaving left and right, and something was happening. And it was just so funny. I'm like, here you go, UWF. Here you go, Mid-South. Here's your new fiery young baby face. Fucking Sam Houston. The guy who... The loser, you know? Yeah. The loser from our TV. Oh, and by the way, your new champion? Jim Crow's bodyguard. How you like them apples? Yeah, I remember it turned me off in a big bad way, but
and you know it's just funny. But they're talented wrestlers.
Of course they are. They're great. But at the time, the perception and well, at the time, Bubba was still learning a lot.
Yeah, oh, yeah, exactly. He was green as grass at that point.
And as great as Sam Houston was, I'm like, it's fucking Sam Houston,
it's
dude.
A job. We saw him get beat in 2 minutes plenty of times on freaking TV.
And he achieved Mid-Atlantic title level.
Yes.
You know, and so, you know, he was always like, oh, he's the protege of Dusty and Magnum and stuff. So that's fine. And you're new fired up. Young Beefus, I was about to mention, like, bullshit. But this crowd, however, they're all in on Sam Houston.
Again, he's doing the Texas gimmick in, you know, Houston, Texas.
His last name is fucking Houston. And he's doing his stupid dance that I always fucking hated.
Yep.
Stupid, like, Texas two-step bullshit. Yep. Ugh. Which, by the way, when he goes to WWF, that becomes his gimmick.
I know.
Because, you know, he dances down. And you got to know, you know, Vince brings him in probably as a favor to Jake. And they go, okay, let's see what you got, young lord. What can you do? And then I can dance. And he's like, oh, I love it. We're going to put a spotlight on you and dance you down to the ring in Madison Square Garden. Yeah, that'll get over like a fart in church. You know. And,
right, you're absolutely right. I mean, it was
too Southern.
In Texas, you have to know the two-step because, like, I even know how to do the Texas two-step.
You better dancer than I am, then.
Yeah, because it's just like you have to. But, yeah, I mean, it's like Sam Houston was a guy, honestly, in my lifetime, I think he might be the number one wrestler I've seen live more than anybody in my life. Yeah, because he opened. I mean, I saw him on in Mid-South here and there. Every now and then, a Crockett show to go to. He would work it, and he was like the opening act from the '80s. Every Houston show I went to for WWF, doing that damn two-step. He would get like a 15-20 minute Sam Houston match against Sonny Beach or Terry Taylor or who have you. And with the influx on the WWE network now of house shows, maybe everyone else can experience the Sam Houston phenomenon
that took New York by storm.
Exactly.
I always like to think because a lot of people would be just like, oh, they gave him a shitty gimmick, but you know, knowing Sam Houston's history and his issues he's had, I'm more along the lines of he makes it to that big time and he's a fucking in that rock star and he couldn't handle it, you know, possibly. Because I mean, Vince goes, I was like, okay, no, we'll give a spotlight on you and you'll dance. That's more than a lot of guys got.
Oh, yeah.
And, but anyway, yeah, trust me, I saw a lot. You saw Sam Houston in 3 promotions. I saw him on every Crockett show I went to, probably, almost everyone. I have a very funny story about the Barbarian kicking the shit out of him, but I'll save it for another day. It's got language I can't repeat. So anyway, this isn't just any ninja. This is a super ninja. And apparently super ninjas get pointy masks, you know, because he's a super ninja.
It's like the assassin special mask.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's, I don't know for sure, but I'm sure there's like G.I. Joe figures. Like there's Storm Shadow. Oh, this is the special Storm Shadow party mask. So this is like his assassin party mask.
You think ninjas are supposed to be able to be like slick, you know, and everything? And this guy's kind of, you know, he's not bad, but you know, he's a big jacked up dude. And number one, Sam's music stinks. He's coming out to some fucking song. I'm just a cowboy. I'm like, fucking awful. But in the crowd, we have the lovely lady who we talked about a few shows ago, who was just out of control and screaming her fucking fool head off and was nuts. We saw the other people laughing at her. We eventually saw the fucking security come and calm her down because she was getting involved. She was, I think, grabbing it was a DiBiase or Gordy or something. She yells. One of the first things she yells is, "Come on, Sam Houston, stick to his ass like glue." Which I'm just like, I remember her saying that the last time. So much weird about this. Number one, she doesn't call him Sam. She calls him by his full name. "Come on, Sam Houston." I'm like, what? And the whole "stick to his ass like glue." And I'm like, this answers a question that people have argued about. People that we know, one we're very close to, we mentioned earlier, have gone into this argument with others about whether or not people in the crowd thought it was real. And Parv would argue on the side of there were many people who thought it was real. And others would argue against them. Everyone's known it's been fake since the 50s, and it's all just people having fun and acting. And the truth is somewhere in the middle.
Yep.
It's not definitive either way. Sure, in this crowd, there are many people who know it's not real and are there having a good time and just being part of the show, booing and cheering and all that. But there's a lot of people who fucking think it's real. She is one of them, because if you're not telling him kick his ass or stick to his ass like glue, wrestle him, you know, number one, you know, and that's the only rat in town. So Sam's going to be sticking to her ass, you know, with some glue. Like it'll look like glue when he's done with her. Oof. Back at the Motel 6. So apparently ninjas hate clapping because Sam Houston got the crowd clapping and shit. And oh, by the way, there's an old man in the crowd too, who makes a few fucking choice, comments throughout this footage. He's great. The ninja gets very upset at hand clapping in the crowd. I was like, oh, didn't know that was a weakness. The old man, yells, Sam Houston's getting beat up, and he yells, "Get up and kick that queer's ass." I was like, well, how do you know he's gay? He's a ninja. I don't know. He's gay.
Just because he took a vow of celibacy, maybe. I don't know.
I was like, but then again, you know, I have been to the Greenwich Village Halloween parade, and I've seen some guys in black masks, you know, and no shirt.
Oh,
I've seen a lot of them. So maybe he's on to something. Carl Fergie's getting fooled by the heel and all that. And holy shit, the chick and the old man want fucking Fergie dead. Like, Fergie!
Yeah.
She's like, come on, Carl Fergie, he's pulling his hair. And the old man just yells, "Come on, Fergie!" I'm loving it. And wouldn't it be just such a pleasure to sit next to this woman?
Oh, my Lord, I couldn't handle it.
Oh, this shrill bitch. But the old man I'd like to do. And I'm not being misogynistic. You need to hear this. This would be unbearable. If I was really stoned, it'd be hilarious for a while, but it would eventually get. That's when we'd have to call Officer McCool Cop over and be like, "Hey, can you do something about this?"
Definitely the Nightstick of Justice.
The Knights, the big long black Nightstick of Justice. He could have hosted Soul Train. I've never even heard him talk. The crowd heat made this kind of fun, you know. And again, Sam Houston was a really good wrestler, but I just can't stand him.
Yeah, I mean, here, if this is where I think he gets his connection to Eddie Gilbert, I know they had a small feud here.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, and then I think that led to Sam Houston working for him in Global because of the history they had here. But yeah, I mean, he's a good wrestler. And he's truly a good babyface. We get some back and forth early, and a cheap shot sets up Ninja's heat. But the crowd's really behind Sam. I mean, obviously, with the Hillbilly faction. But the Ninja's putting the boots to him. And, of course, I mean, he's a ninja, so we get a nerve hold here. We get some King of the Mountain spots. Ninja's focusing on the neck and throat area because, you know, he's doing ninjutsu stuff. The work isn't high-end, but it makes sense. We get a nice gut-wrench suplex by Ninja. We got to give it to the crowd, though. I mean, they never wavered from the support of Sam. Just behind him all entire match. And, I mean, he sold for, like, 90% of it. And he makes a quick comeback and then goes over Ninja, ends it for the Ninja. You know, nothing incredible, nothing good, very forgettable match. I mean, it was almost like a squash in a way for the Ninja, except Sam won, because that's how much he sold during the match.
Well, that's what he was the best at, getting the shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, because like, when I watched him, and when he had longer matches, like against a Tully or an Arn, where they decided to give him a 12-match in Crockett, what was the best part of the match was him getting his ass kicked. But once he came in a comeback, he had an okay punch, threw a decent drop kick. He had the bulldog was his finisher.
Well, no, he used the flying clothesline here, didn't he?
Oh, he might have been here, but later on it was the bulldog. I know in the WWF it was the bulldog.
Of course.
And yeah, so I mean, he was kind of limited on what he could do. Offensively, so yeah, the smartest part to do is like I always thought he was a really effective tag worker because he could sell his ass off for anybody.
Okay, well then I gotta tell the story and I'll just enter it real quick. Okay, so I've told this before. So we're at the Philadelphia Spectrum. I'm sorry, the Philadelphia Civic Center for NWA. My first girlfriend had just dumped me. And I was heartbroken. My dad and his best friend took me to Philadelphia for the day, and we went to wrestling. You know, they weren't even fans. And one of the matches, the main event was a rematch of the I Quit match between Tully and Magnum.
Nice.
So yeah. But one of the opening matches was the Barbarian versus Sam Houston. Now, when we got there, we bought our tickets when we got there in the parking garage. And we were sitting up in the cheaper seats of a relatively small place. And we were sitting up there, and the pot smoke was so thick. I'm 15 years old. It gave my dad and his friend a contact high and a headache. And we were sitting with nothing but African Americans. We were in their section. And it was great. We were having a blast. Everyone was having such a good time.
Of course, you're getting contact highs.
Well, that too, but it was just like, but we're up here in the cheap seats, and it was crazy up there at the Philadelphia Civic Center.
Oh, yeah.
It was crazy in that section, and we always chose to sit up there. We could also get beer when my dad wasn't there. But anyway, so it's Barbarian Sam Houston, and we're sitting next to this African-American couple, late teens, maybe early 20s. The girl had never seen wrestling before, and the Barbarian, who's a lot better than the fucking Super Ninja, you know,
yes,
and bigger and giant. And he, you know how he brutalizes people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and even if he's just good and really not hurting them. And Sam Houston. So he's killing Sam Houston. And this girl is having a fit because she thinks it's real.
Right.
And she's jumping up and down and screaming, oh, God, somebody help that poor boy. Oh, my God. He's going to murder him. He's killing him. Oh, my God. And then she goes, God damn. She goes, that N-word is going to kill that little white boy. Ah, that N-word's going to kill that little white boy. And everyone's cracking up.
Dying,
I mean,
I'm sure.
All cracking up. He's going, baby, no, sit down. It's not real, baby.
Yeah.
It's not real. She's like, no. Don't you tell me. And he looks over and he's like, hey, man, could you tell her? And I'm like, ma'am, I'm 15. You know, I'm like, ma'am, it's not real. And she's like, no. And she's shouting and like, having this fit until it's finally over. And they left. She couldn't take it anymore. She nope, I'm gone. And everyone was dying laughing. But I remember that match, A, for how funny that was, and B, for if I had never seen wrestling before and was up there all high and watching that, I would have thought, yes, that guy is getting murdered.
Yep.
Because when Sam Houston is getting murdered, he's amazingly entertaining.
Agreed. That's funny. And the next thing we're going to look at is a tag match between Sting and Eddie Gilbert versus Gary Young and Jeff Gaylord. The thing goes 20-plus minutes.
Wow.
You got to admit, at first, when you saw the time, I was terrified. I mean,
me too.
You know, but you know what? Eddie Gilbert does it again.
Holy shit. I love this.
It was a fucking Eddie Gilbert masterpiece. I mean, and I really enjoy this because, you know, he's obviously, we know the history with Sting. There's also a history with Gary Young because Gilbert, we see him working Gary Young here, and it was right when he was first starting out. Young has been around, for about 5-6 years at this point. But he's never really had a break. He's always been an underneath guy. And Gilbert ends up taking him to Memphis, I think, right after Mid-South sells to Crockett. And he takes him over to Memphis, and they start working a program together. And you see the kind of the chemistry they had here in this match, and you see why Gilbert saw something in him. I thought this thing was brilliant. Sting is right here. He's starting to get some cheers here. Like, the crowd wants to turn him babyface. I like Gilbert taking his time early in the match. I love the big dive and miss is a great opening spot by Gilbert, and it's very large and elaborate. It really needed, I would have popped, because at this point, Gilbert's doing like that, strut, you know, that cocky strut. When he dove and missed, I think we really needed like a Gary Young strut to really put an exclamation point on it. I think that would have made the crowd erupt. We get some chain wrestling early, and Young establishes he isn't going to be pushed around. Young with some really nice deep arm drags, and Eddie's really milking it and just working. Eddie is so much fun just stooging away here. The exaggerated bump on a stomp to the face was just glorious. Now he's begging off to Gaylord. Sting's in, and it's the Muscles team Muscles turn. That's Sting and Gaylord. And both Sting and Eddie do a great job of a building to both guys taking that shoulder block bump. I thought that was an easy spot. But the way they milked it and built it up into a big moment was awesome. And the crowd exploded. Like, it was they made it so important. And the crowd ate it up with a spoon. Eddie with a great distraction spot that allows Sting to toss Gary over to the top rope. This sets up the heat. And Sting looks like to be softening up Gary's back. Eddie gets a cheap shot in. The cheap shot's behind the ref's back. Gets tons of heat. This gets to rally behind Gary like he's... The crowd gets to rally around Gary like he's Tommy fucking Rogers. Eddie's in. He takes over working an abdominal stretch again, focusing on the back. Again, they toss Young over the top rope. Back to the abdominal stretch. Eddie gets cocky and misses an elbow drop in a great revenge spot. Young tosses Eddie over the top rope, which also sets up the hot tag, so it's brilliant. Gaylord is a house of fire, but Sting is stronger and turns the tide. Eddie gets the three after Sting does all the heavy lifting, which is, again, nice little foreshadowing of Sting becoming a babyface here. But I thought Eddie Gilbert was absolutely incredible here and really shows what an incredible worker. And when people say he is a genius to the business, here's a perfect example why. I felt Young carried his end. Both Sting and Gaylord had their moments, but this far exceeded my expectation. You should really show this match around to show why Eddie Gilbert is an incredible worker. Give it 3.25 stars. Really good stuff. I tweeted out to Missy Hyatt, and she replies, "What, Jeff Gaylord was in a good match?" I go, Yeah, but Eddie was just a mice master here, and it was total smoke and mirrors, and just they used Keeler just on a couple big spots and stuff, and that was it. But yeah,
she was good too.
Yep. Man, what do you think, brother?
Okay, so first thing, look at my notes here. First thing I wrote down was like 20 minutes for these fucking guys, and I have a page and a half of notes. So, by the way, this was when the weed kicked in when I was watching this the other night. So I'm watching this masterpiece, but there was also a lot to have fun with. Here's what I think about. Maybe Eddie pissed somebody off. They still were at that level on the card, and they're like, here you go, Gilbert. You know, 20, or say it's Watts, you know, here you go, Gilbert. I want you 20 minutes with these guys and make it work. And he's like, okay, I will, you redneck motherfucker. You know what? Yeah. I'm going to give you 21 because the match is a 20-minute match. There's 21 minutes of content on there. He's like, and I'll give you one, you know, I'll give you one for this. You know what? Fuck you, Watts. I'm going to bury you under a Russian flag. hit you in your redneck head with a shovel. Because Eddie Gilbert is cool. I love Eddie. I remember watching back then. I was like, why is he? He's not a bad guy. He's great. They introduce him as Hot Dog Eddie Gilbert.
Oh, did they? I didn't even catch that, man.
Announcer calls him Hot Dog Eddie Gilbert, and Eddie just he no-sells it. Completely, he doesn't even glance at him, which I thought was very good. You know, and I'm thinking, I mean, at this point, the two people in this ring have the most experience are Eddie and Missy.
Yeah.
Unless I don't know when Young started. So.
Well, Young might have had more experience than Missy.
Maybe, yeah. I was thinking Young possibly.
Yeah, because we saw Young in 82 versus Gino. And
oh, okay. Then
didn't start
until
like
Young.
84 in World Class. Okay,
then,
yeah, okay.
Then definitely Young. Yeah. And then our favorite shrill idiot in the crowd yelling. She goes, come on, Jeff and Gary, kick their ass. Oh, okay. Jeff and Gary. And she's all behind them. And she's yelling, and there's a word I can't make out, but she yells a couple of times, put something on his ass that Drano won't take off, or something like Red Dog, apparently, or some local Texas cleanser. I don't know. It was some sort of cleanser, Borax. But she's yelling, put something on his ass that Drano won't take off. Oh yeah, are these Houston colloquialisms I'm just not aware of?
I've never heard of this one either.
Okay.
I played the fifth on it, I guess.
Okay, and then is that something your father told you? Boy, if you don't get in there and clean your room, I'm going to put something on your ass and Drano will take off.
Exactly.
But then we get the old man who just yelled, Gilbert, yes, sissy. Yes, sissy. He kind of sounds like a southern Mickey from Rocky. And then the chick's yelling while Gary's getting beat up by Eddie or Sting or whoever. She yells, stick to it, Gary. Don't let it get you down. I was like, oh, that's kind of... and then, and I don't know, it's unplanned, but 2 seconds later, he has a fiery babyface comeback. I'm like, hey, it worked. And she's like, where are you to go? It sounds like she's saying Jerry instead of Gary. And she's just out of control. And then Jerry does something great. It helps everyone involved in the ring and outside the ring. He grabs a chair and pops the crowd. So nobody has to listen to this fucking chick anymore. He's like, I can't take any more of this. I'm going to pop this crowd. Chair, that'll do it. Good Lord. And Gary's definitely better than a hero. And then he tags in Gaylord. And he's so awkward.
Yeah.
And he's so I picture he's a big gay caveman. He's like, Gaylord smash.
I can see that. I bought him. I thought he was a guy who was like he was an escape. He ran away from Chippendales and became a wrestler.
Fox Horror Picture Show that totally, but he's Gaylord of the jungle, Gaylord smash. Missy at one time, the ref's telling her what to do, and she just looks up and says, ah, shit, F. It was great. I think she was so good. Eddie does the great thing about he wants to use her Gucci purse right away.
Yeah.
The one with Rick. And she's like, no, 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 not yet. Oh, no. But she's hiding it behind, no, not my purse. That is good stuff. And then, well, Gary Young's getting beat up and he's selling and looking good. Gaylord coming in to help him. He's so robotic and so, it's like, Gaylord, feel for friend.
Yeah.
And like Gaylord? And Gaylord's trying to clap and strut like Eddie, and he's got no rhythm whatsoever. You know, he was made in a lab, you know, a very gay lab. And at the end, when he's consoling Gary, he's like patting him like an ape. And he's like, Gaylord fail for ape-like friend. Gaylord sad. He stinks. But God bless Eddie Gilbert, because he made this fucking entertaining as hell. You know, brilliant. if you got Eddie and a game and Young Sting, Missy at ringside, Gary Young, who's perfectly competent, and this fucking stiff, you can work around the fucking stiff, and they do it. And Eddie Gilbert, you know, someone told him, go out there and make this work for 20 minutes. And he's like, okay, I'll do it.
Well, I mean, you. I don't think this is hyperbole, but would you call this like one of the most genius matches you've ever seen? I mean, because it really, I can't imagine. Not a whole lot of people could have got this much mileage out of these guys.
If we're going to look at it from the perception of what we're watching, how it works, and we're watching how the trick is done, and we're aware of that to an extent, you know, I always hate it when internet fans or whoever think they know everything about fucking wrestling because they don't, but you could tell when a guy is fucking has shit to work with and creating a masterpiece because he's the guy calling everything.
Yeah.
You know that is, you know, maybe all the little details, no, but we know that. And based on that alone, holy shit. By the time this was done, I was like, I just loved that.
Yeah. I didn't think I was going to love it. I mean, the only way it was going to work was I was like, Gary Young has got to be facing peril. And they just worked around Gaylord's limitations completely and made him shine and I mean, I'll give Gaylord credit. He didn't shit the bed when they put him in the spots. But man, yeah, Gilbert was just incredible here. Just a total genius. And if this is a match, if I'm going to show the greatness of Eddie Gilbert, this is definitely a match I'd show. I mean, he's had better matches, don't get me wrong. But this was just an incredible Eddie Gilbert performance.
See, all, it is. But all, again, all you got to do is put a hyphen between gay and Lord. He's gay Lord. He's the king of the gay jungle. He's just like a big ape.
You're holding onto that joke forever, aren't you?
I'm never letting go of gay Lord of the jungle.
You're waiting for me to pop, and I'm not.
I know. I keep waiting for it, but I know. Is inside you want to.
Oh, Jesus. On that note, why don't we take our final break, and when we come back, we'll look at some killer promos and the main event.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA on-demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back. And geez, we open up, we get this series of promos where we get Buddy Landell, Mr. Wrestling 3. We get the PYTs. We get Doc. We get a Taylor promo. We get Fantastic's Duggan. We get Cornette. We get Butch Reed. We get a JYD promo. Of course, we get Ladd and Magnum TA here.
Mm-hmm.
Run it down for us, Johnny.
Holy shit, this is like a treasure trove of awesome. You know, just one after another. And I kept going, number one, the card that they're fucking hyping. I'm like, can we have that, please?
We've gotten a couple off here.
Okay.
We got in the Fantastic Duggan match. I mean, Fantastic team with Duggan against the Midnight mm-hmm. and Cornette. We got in that one. We've gotten JYD versus Butch Reed. And we've gotten the Magnum TA Ernie Ladd match. And I think we got in the Doc and Taylor match. So we've gotten most of this stuff.
I have no memory.
Yeah, I know. I'm here to cover you. That's what I'm here for, man.
I know. But anyway, so first you got, hold on, let me get back here. First you got, okay, JR with his haircut stinks. It's the worst haircut. Just a big parted on the side, pile of perfect hair.
Cheap as shit.
Cheap. Ah, it looked fucking low rent. So first promo is Landell and new Mr. Wrestling 2. That was Hercules Fernandez, right?
Yeah, so that's why I wrote Wrestling 3, but I didn't say Mr. Wrestling.
Okay. So Buddy starts and he's talking about the fucking PYT. And this is so fucking funny. He starts off strong. He's like, you know, they ought to call you the Lee brothers, you know, home and Ugg. And I'm like, yeah, that's funny, you know. And then he stumbles and he says, and see, now all the heels, by the way, are giving theirs filmed somewhere else, and all the baby faces are with Jim Ross, yeah. By the way, throughout this whole thing, which I prefer. Like, to be perfectly honest, the one thing I never liked about old WWF stuff was when the heels just walk in from one side and the baby faces would walk in the other side, but apparently they're all there.
Yeah.
Talking about how they're going to kill each other, and they're there. You know, it always bugged me, and I like this touch. But then he says about the PYT, he's like, you know, a bunch of ex-shoeshine boys, you know what I'm talking about. And I'm like, ooh, and of all things I never thought I'd see, Hercules Hernandez comes to the rescue on a promo.
Yeah.
He, under that fucking mask, you know, he went, fucking Buddy. And because you see Buddy just pull down, like, oh, fuck. He's not, this is not the Buddy Landell we're used to on promos. He might be a little fucked up, or he realized he you know, whatever, he fucked up. And Herc saves it. He jumps right in and changes the subject right away. And then we're gonna kick your ass, blah blah blah. And then he goes, and then what we're gonna do something then you never seen, ain't that right, Buddy? And yeah, and then Buddy gets, so he brings him back into it. You know, he saved his ass. He saved his ass on this program. You know the history of, we all know about Watson Buddy.
Yep.
You know, and everything at that time. And so Hercules Hernandez under a mask saves the day in a promo. You know, you only on this service will you see that. Then we got the PYTs with JR. And they cut this awesome promo about that, you know, because we're hardcore and from the ghetto. In their fucking Michael Jackson outfits.
Yep.
They're hardcore from the ghetto with the glove.
Yep.
The motherfucker's wearing the glove. It's the beat it jacket and these tight jeans, and they're going about how they're hardcore from the ghetto. It's fucking hilarious. If you were listening to it, you go, that's a great promo. Watching it, it's ridiculous.
Yep.
Then we got Doc with the World Television medal. I always think that was cool. They had a medal for a while instead of a belt. Like, I remember watching, didn't Dick Slater throw it in a river or something?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. The Doc's won it. And apparently, it belongs to Terry Taylor, but Doc stole it because he had just turned heel. And Doc gives a pretty decent promo.
Oh, I thought this was a stinker. But better than normal. Better than a normal Doc promo.
Well, yeah, that's
but
what
was,
I mean.
But it was still a stinker.
Well, with the caveat that
he was still wooden.
He was still wooden, but the caveat about how young he was, and he's giving promo time, and I was pleasantly surprised. He's still playing on the fact that he was an athlete. And he's I guess as a sportsman, I'm supposed to give you a shot, so I'll do it as a sportsman, but you know, I'm going to fuck you up, Taylor. And I liked it. He insulted Terry, and then Terry's back, and he goes to cut an impassioned promo, and he fucking stumbles over his fucking words. He's like, Dr. Death has laid his hands on his cards. And you see him go, and then just go on. I'm like, laid his hands on his cards. I mean, laid his cards on the table? So try and say. Now, Grant, I was praising the shit out of Terry Taylor last week, but okay, that was a couple years later. So right here, no, he just he biffs it.
I didn't hate the delivery, but I thought he lacked a lot of spark. You know,
It picked up a little by the end. Yeah. Where he's just like, you know, I'm going to do whatever I have to take to get my property back.
Very monotone. Yeah, it seemed like he should have been a lot more pissed off that he got his damn medallion stolen. You know,
well, he laid his hands on his cards. You know,
that's true. Good point.
Now the opposite here is. The stuff for the fans and the fans and Duggins are there. Duggins are there with JR, but they go to Jim Cornette, who gives possibly one of my, I've never seen it before, possibly one of my favorite Jim Cornette promos I've ever fucking seen. Cause he's immediately going, you're darn right. I'm scared. I'm not scared of Tommy Rogers or Bobby Fulton, and the Midnight Express could handle them, and if it had been anybody else, but that's Hacksaw Jim Duggan. If he gets his hands on me, and then he proceeds to poetically yet grotesquely describe what might happen to him at the hands of this giant gorilla, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He is selling so many fucking tickets. Right there. Say, so like, come out and it's basically come out and see this happen to me. But he's describing it like, this could happen and this could, I know this could happen. And I don't know. He's like, but I'm not afraid, but I could surprise you. Cause I went out to Hollywood to train with my personal trainer, and Richard Simmons says that I'm ready to go or some shit. And then he just like, if he was holding a mic, he should have dropped it. And he had a look at his face like, follow that, motherfucker.
Yeah, it was a total gold standard promo. And it felt like it built up where you want to see Duggan kill him. It was so well executed and so well done.
So good. And then we get to the good guys. Bobby Fulton, cuts pretty decent, fired up Southern Babyface promo, and it gets to Tommy Rogers, and he goes, they're talking about what could happen to Jim Cornette. Tommy Rogers goes, boy, I'd like to get a front row seat to see that. And then goes, actually, I guess I will. And I hope all of you get your front row seats. okay. You just see it in his eyes. Like, he's like, fuck. Because he recovered right away. He realized what he had said. Boy, I wish I could see that. Fuck, I'm in this match. And then we get fucking Duggan, and he's great. And he's leaning a little towards the buffoon character here that we've known.
But it was such a fun promo, though, you know?
He was out of his mind. People need to see this and watch Jim Ross try not to laugh when because he was saying that Duggan apparently had fallen asleep twice, and so Jim Cornette had like put him to sleep. So he's like, yeah, you're not gonna get behind me this time, with that that sleeping gas, what do you call it, Jim? And he just goes, ether.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, ether. And the sleeping gas, what is it? Ether. Yeah, ether, thanks. Anyway, and Jim Ross his face is shivering, trying not to crack up, because he knows that if he does, Bill Watts is going to put his boot in his ass. Jesus Christ.
And Duggan's glasses, raised his coolness factor 8 billion times, didn't it?
Yeah, and JR's trying to get the smile off of his face, and he's just going, think of the puppies, Jim. Think about the puppies. Think about the puppies. Don't crack. Oh man, and Duggan was on. He was on fire here. I want to know who the coke supplier down in fucking Mid-South was, because a couple of these guys, you know, cocaine's a terrible drug, but it's done a few good things.
Oh, hell yeah.
And the next one is one of them, because Hacksaw fucking Butch Reed cuts an amazing promo.
I love this promo, and it was off the charts. I thought it was the best one of all of them. And there was a lot of great ones on this little thing. But yeah, this was incredible.
So he's facing JYD. I can't remember what the stip is.
I think they're building to the dog collar match. Yep.
It was dog collar match. So I couldn't transcribe it here, but Butch Reed is on fire, and he's it's amazing. And he's like, no, he don't. The best thing about it, he's given a heel promo where you believe everything he says, and he believes everything he says. This isn't one of those that heel's lying, being sniveling. He totally is being like, fuck you, I'm the new boss. Yeah, that was this promo. And he's like, oh, Junkyard Dog? Yeah, well, you ain't even housebroken, boy.
Great line.
You ain't even housebroken. You know, and here, you're looking at the dog catcher Butch Reed.
Yep.
The dog catching you. Yeah. And he's like, you think I sweat you? You think I'm scared of you, dog boy? He's like, every time we meet, I come on top. Like, then he lists matches. He's like, when it was the cage match, I won. And then he's like, during the yellow paint match, he's like, I turned that dirty, greasy black dog into a yellow dog. And it's fucking easy. And he's flexing his giant fucking muscles and shouting and pointing. And I wrote down, like, this is why cocaine's okay sometimes. Because at the end of this, when he finishes, it's a crescendo, boom, and he walks out. He walks off camera with this look on his face like, fuck yeah.
Yeah,
like,
and Watts pops a boner because, we're drawing even more money.
Dude, Bill Watts was furiously masturbating in the corner into his hat. and it stuck to him like glue. So then JYD is with Jim Ross. And the graphic says Junkyard Dog with Junkyard in quotations. For some reason, you know, like his name is actually like Sylvester Dog. He's Junkyard Dog. Fucking weird. I always love old wrestling. It was in every federation where whoever's in charge of the fucking graphics would do all this terrible Ric Flair always spelled wrong and shit like this. But, and Junkyard Dog gives a pretty good promo. You know, it's pretty good. And he's like telling him Butch Reed was going to do. But then it almost felt at the end that he was feeling like Butch Reed was like being like, you know, your time is done. I'm the new top guy. There might have been some jealousy going on.
Oh,
there.
Yeah, there definitely was.
In that promo. Because Junkyard Dog gets off a little line, and I couldn't follow it completely, but it was something like, you could be out in a swamp smothered with garbage, and you still couldn't draw flies, and storms off. And I'm thinking, draw flies? I'm like, why would he say that? And I'm like, okay. So I'd have to go back and watch it again, but he basically is just saying, you couldn't draw flies. I'm the goddamn Junkyard Dog. I'm the king of this fucking town. But to mention draw flies, I thought that was interesting too.
Yep.
But these, oh my God, if you were a wrestling fan back then and these, you saw all of these to try to get you to go buy a ticket to go down to wrestling, and you're maybe thinking about, well, am I going to go? Or am I not going to go? God, if I'd been your age and there, that was when I was 15. I was 15. But if I'd been living there like you, that would have been one of the ones like, Mom, you got to take me.
Yep.
What a card. Yeah, this ruled.
A couple more promos.
Oh, that's right. So Ernie Ladd is coming, and he's old. He's got white hair almost. But he gives a great fucking promo, and he does it. Mr. Nelson Man. And he's talking about what he's going to do to Magnum T.A. Apparently, he'd gotten Magnum T.A.'s face. And he gives it just fucking rules. You know, I couldn't write notes on it.
Great job of putting himself and his opponent over. It was a great promo.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's just when I watch Ernie Ladd cut promos, I'm just like, I just want to bask in this because he's so goddamn good. Yeah. And he's looking old here. But then Magnum is given his, and he for Magnum TA at this time, he gives a pretty good fucking promo, especially at the end. He tells us, like, the last time I was in Houston, Ted DiBiase and I had an amazing match, made my career, and we literally tore down the ring. It came down. But he's getting over being a little stilted, but he gets to the end. He's like, because he's the champ, man. And he's carrying himself like a young champ, and he don't take any shit off anybody, even an old vet. And he's like, you don't ever put your hands in my face, you know, Ernie Ladd. He's like, I don't care who the fuck you are. I am Magnum TA and I'm the goddamn champ. You don't put your hands on me. You know, and he storms off. I was like, yeah, that's the Magnum I thought. It was like the only pure baby face back then that I just thought was the best, and I loved him. Because he'd get serious like that. You know, don't fuck with me, I will fuck you up. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, it was a great walking tall baby face, you know, promo.
Yeah, loved this stuff. Oh, so good.
Yeah, I don't have anything really to add. You covered it brilliantly. But yeah, I was like, it was just like, wow, this is just incredible stuff. And that leads us to the main event of Ted DiBiase, One Man Gang, Gang's UWF champion, no DQ. We got the promos. We covered them a couple shows back where DiBiase cuts the promo for his build to One Man Gang. And then now we got the match. And it was brilliant. I really like both these guys. This is no DQ. DiBiase has the glove. One Man Gang with the chain. Ted cut that great promo leading up to this. One Man Gang with a cheap shot to start. He takes Teddy outside and begins to beat on him. Ted makes a comeback and hurts Gang. We're getting a lot of back and forth with neither getting the advantage. Akbar enters the fray and posts Teddy. Gang waffles the hell out of Ted with a chair. And Gang starts working over Ted for the past few minutes. A really nice King of the Mountain spot by Gang. Ted's busted open. And Gang is just working that cut. Ted fires up, but he's cut off. And I love this spot where Gang looks like he's going into a chin lock. But no, he just grabs Ted's blood and wipes it all over his own face. Lovely, lovely. Loved it. Gang has just been fantastic here. We see a missed splash by the Gang. Sets up a Ted comeback, but he's lost too much blood. In an act of desperation, he uses a chair and it starts another comeback. This is one hell of a brawl. The crowd is feeling a title change. The ref bumps were a little overboard, I thought. Love the finish, though. This was super heated. Both guys look great. Babyface Ted really has ruled in Houston. And One Man Gang was a human wrecking ball here. 3.5-star match. Great stuff. I mean, God, I love this territory. What did you make of the match?
It was a blast. But there were some dudes shouting moon.
Yep.
For the gang. Because this was, Babyface Ted with his, his frosty tips and everything. So, there had to be some dudes with the fuck that. Look at the One Man Gang. Because you know why? Because the One Man Gang had such a great look. He just looked cool, the fucking jean jacket, and the best thing, and I was looking at the jacket, and I never put it all together, because I was like, yeah, he's One Man Gang, he's such like a big guy, he's a biker, but then I realized he's the One Man Biker Gang.
Yeah.
Because, so he drives around on a motorcycle, and nobody else, he's the gang, and you could see that, because the design on the back of his jean jacket, his colors, his gang colors. He's got gang colors. He's got biker gang colors. It says One Man Gang. So there's nobody else in the gang except for him. There's only one of those jackets. No one else can have one.
Yeah, that's no the thing about the gang. I've always loved that gimmick name. It's up there with the Angel of Death as a name I really like. Yeah. But the gang actually had an actual gimmick behind it, and it made it so much cooler.
But actually, and also One Man Gang, it rolls off the lips better. It sounds hard, he's the One Man Gang. Like, usually, I used to hate it when guys had names like that and not real names. But One Man Gang, I was like, no, that sounds awesome. You know, and because he looked awesome. And so Ted's got his glove. And the One Man Gang comes in with a giant fucking chain on his. And I'm always laughing at the whole Ted DiBiase's glove can knock you out. It's a leather glove. You know, I love that he got it over like that. But they're like, oh, that's, it's a foreign object. Like, it's no, it's a piece of cloth. But I figured it out, and I figured out a lot. This is how he got rich, okay? Because behind the scenes, he had invented or stolen the patent of some sort of futuristic Kevlar that was very, very thin but as hard as metal. And he had it made into his glove, and he invested in this, and that's how he became the $1 million man. That's how he suddenly became rich. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I thought that would have done better. Oh well. Anyway,
that's okay.
There was a, I'll tell Parv that one. I think he'd like that. But for
if he did wrestling podcasts.
Yeah, sure. So at some point, there's obviously one of those birthday parties that we hear tell of in the front row, because there's like 12 little kids in neon shirts. They're like, whoa. And I'm like, oh, the birthday party's in the front row. And then they flash back and they're not. It's like, I guess maybe they were allowed to just come up for a little bit and then go back.
Yeah, for their camera op. Time to go.
Camera op or something. Yeah. But, yeah, One Man Gang walking in with that giant chain around his fist. If you're not like, that guy looks fucking awesome, you know, then you don't like wrestling. You don't count, because that's what a visual. And, yeah, it was just refs are flying everywhere. At the end, that's all I wrote. Refs are just flying everywhere in this match. Because how many ref bumps did they do?
Two.
Oh, it was two? Okay, it just felt like...
But they were just right after each other. It was just overboard. It might have even been three for all I know.
But yeah, they were like bing, bing, bing. I'm just like, oh, the refs are just going everywhere. And blood, everything I love. Fucking a big, giant fucking brawl.
Yep.
Blood, you know, a hot crowd. Great.
Great stuff, man. Man, we really got a nice eclectic group of matches.
Yeah,
this week,
this was a nice content dump.
Yeah, it really was. I really loved it, especially the promos, man. It really fleshes out what's going on at the time. We'll end it here. What? Anything you got to plug, brother?
We just did that Kelly's new Mount Olympus. It was me and you. We had a mini Titans reunion, talking about all the Bruno stuff on the Bruno collection on WWE Network, and it was a ton of fun. So,
yeah,
go listen to that.
It's cool seeing Bruno getting a lot of love right now from, like, Jericho and stuff.
Kelly came out with hashtag Titans did it first.
It's very true. And it's just something that's he's a really fascinating guy to talk about, and it feels like we really do know a lot about him now. It almost feels like we know him just by how much footage we've watched of the guy.
But also, Jericho's next thing he's doing next week, his podcast, breaking down Inoki Ali. Hashtag Titans did it first.
First, there we go. Hey, maybe he's a closet fan. Hey, follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. Again, have a great week. We'll keep on watching the wrestling, and we'll see you soon. Later.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden, king of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes. Look high is my last hope. Chavo Guerrero, coming off the top rope. Red Shoes Dugan, holding his arm high, all out of breath. I hated all of Chavo's enemies. I would pray nightly for their death. Descending like fire on the people who deserved it most. Almost completely unknown outside of Texas and on the West Coast.